to the Market, sponsored by the CME Group, Dateline, Chicago, Friday, June 10. As we approach the middle of June Dairy Month, I say hello again. Max Armstrong and yours truly, Orion Samuelson, here for our weekly look at market activity on Wall Street and in the commodity world. And I can't remember a week where there hasn't been some very unusual activity. This was certainly another week for that happening. For example, in the grain market, in the soybean world, something happened that hasn't happened for 43 years. We'll get to that a little bit later, but let's look at Wall Street and how we ended the week on Wall Street as the stock market dropped for a second straight day following another drop in oil prices. And now that renewed worry about the global economy, and they're looking at Britain. And that June 23rd referendum on whether Britain will stay in the European Union. And a poll is now showing those in favor of Britain leaving the EU, or Brexit, as we call it, were well ahead of those who favor remaining. And the British pound fell against the dollar. One analyst in New York said the global economy is weak. It can't handle any major shocks. And if Brexit occurs, that's a major shock. Again, the date, June 23rd. Leading losses for the day, the S&P Energy Index down 2%. U.S. crude fell 3%, dropping below $50 again. For the week, the S&P 500 down 0.1%. The NASDAQ lost 1%, but the Dow was up 0.3%. And investors around the world were trading equities for less risky assets, such as U.S. Treasury bonds and the Japanese yen. And some stock investors are betting on a return of the volatility that marked the first 2 months of the year. The bounce back in commodity prices that fueled much of the 13% rally in the S&P 500 index from its February lows is leveling off, and the volatility index, you know, that's the worry factor at the CME VIX, or at the CBOE VIX, that's the fear gauge, and it has jumped more than 16%. Among the few bright spots today on Wall Street was Intel, up 0.3%. Bloomberg reporting the chip maker would replace Qualcomm as an Apple supplier for some iPhones. As a result, Qualcomm was down 2.1%. But now let's look ahead to next week on Wall Street, because it's going to be a tense and busy week. You know why. Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee will hold its two-day meeting on interest rates and other issues and will issue a statement on Wednesday. The chair, Janet Yellen, will hold a news conference after the decision, and that should be an interesting one, because Chair Yellen has spent most of the past month dropping hints that a summer rate hike was on the way. However, that disappointing May employment report, plus the impending UK vote on EU, have toned down her message, making a rate rise now highly unlikely. Wall Street is not anticipating one next week. As a matter of fact, much of Wall Street is now moving its expectations to a September rate hike to be the first one. And then there's a full week of data releases for the world's largest economy: retail sales, housing starts, building permits, inflation. So let's take a look at what's coming next week. May retail sales and inflation reports will dominate the calendar. And looking at some of those reports, and there's a lot of them, here they come. The Commerce Department will be reporting Tuesday on retail sales. Expectations are they're going to report a 0.3% increase in May retail sales. On Wednesday, the Labor Department is expected to report that producer prices rose 0.3% in May after increasing 0.2% the prior month. And the Federal Reserve is expected to report that industrial production slipped 0.1% in May after jumping 0.7% in April. On Thursday, we get data from the Labor Department, likely showing that the consumer price index went up 0.3% in May, mainly because of an increase in gasoline prices. And then on Friday, the Commerce Department expected to report that housing starts have slipped slightly in May, and building permits are forecast increasing to a 1,150,000 unit pace in that report. There are some earnings reports, not many. Oracle Corporation expected to report a fourth quarter profit slightly above analyst average estimate. That will happen on Thursday. Analysts expect that Oracle will benefit from growth in its cloud business, an area that it has heavily invested in and is hoping to make their final report look a lot better. And then supermarket operator Kroger Company is expected to report a first quarter profit pretty much in line with analysts' average estimate on Thursday. And while the company is likely to benefit from some store closures by Walmart, higher wages are expected to hurt the grocery chain operator. Valeant Pharmaceuticals International's new chief executive, Joseph Papa, is expected to face public and difficult questions on Tuesday from shareholders at the annual general meeting on the company's tumbling stock prices and the aggressive drug pricing strategy, which has sparked a U.S. Senate investigation. So there's a lot of activity on the schedule for next week. And then there's the Bayer-Monsanto situation. That's back in the news today as Monsanto Company, the world's largest seed company, still not opening its books more than 2 weeks after it rejected Bayer's $62 billion acquisition offer, but then left the door open to a possible deal. But the impasse shows little progress in negotiations have been made since Monsanto, back on May 24th, said no to the German company's $122 per share cash offer. But the company said it was, quote, open to continued and constructive conversations. But Monsanto has said that Bayer's offer significantly undervalues the company and also does not adequately address or provide reassurance for some of the potential financing and regulatory execution risks related to the acquisition. We got word last week that Bayer had arranged for the loan to cover that $62 billion purchase. Now, Monsanto, based in St. Louis, has not directly told Bayer that it's looking for better terms in order for it to offer the German company access to confidential information. But, of course, until Bayer can look at the Monsanto books, there probably will not be a lot happening. And finally, a look at the oil market as we ended the week. Oil prices today down 3%. After showing another slight increase in the oil drilling rig count, U.S. oil drillers added 3 oil rigs in the week ending June 10th after a 9-rig increase in the previous week, and that's one of the numbers now that oil traders apparently are going to take a close look. West Texas Intermediate futures down $1.49 to $49.07 a barrel. That's down 3%, marking the largest slide since early April. So, what is happening in the commodity world? Well, we're going to take a look at the livestock, particularly that cattle market, when Max Armstrong sits down with Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services, when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dennis Smith, Archer Financial Services, joining us in the studio. Dennis, let's talk about the cattle situation to begin with. After months of volatility, what's been happening there most recently as we've been watching the cattle market?
Well, a lot of frustration continues. We have a sharply discounted futures market trading well under the cash. A lot of volatility. Sometimes the volatility just seems to make no sense at all. There's a lot of good things beginning to happen in the cattle market. Weights are coming down. Marketings are becoming very aggressive. So these are two factors that we did not have all of last year, and these are positive factors. Exports, we think, are on the mend, on the recovery. So there's a lot of good things happening right now. If we could kind of get some confidence back into the futures market and get this sharply discounted board a little bit closer to the cash market. We continue to work with the CME in terms of the volatility and some of the issues and reasons for that volatility. It's not as easy to pinpoint and take care of as you would think. But, yeah, we're hopeful to see the market begin to settle down a little bit and hopefully become a more useful tool in the future.
You mentioned exports seem to be showing some improvement. Where in the world are we exporting more beef?
Well, we continue to have our traditional customers, and they continue to be involved, and we're slowly expanding some of our smaller customers. But, you know, Mexico, Japan, South Korea, our traditional customers continue to come to beef, and we are beginning to discount our beef products. So wholesale beef prices running anywhere from 15 to 20% below a year ago, finally showing some signs of helping out.
Coming into this new year, feedlot operators were looking at some nice, inexpensive feed costs. That's changed a little bit since the start of 2016. How's that having an effect?
Boy, has it changed, and that's been a surprise. I think the price of feeder cattle is still overvalued in terms of finished product, in my opinion. And one reason for it was a cheap feed. The other reason, grass fever with pasture conditions outstanding throughout the United States. But regardless of how much grass there is, if you're going to pencil out a loss when you place those animals, we have a problem. So feeder prices, in my opinion, need to come down because now, as you've indicated, the price of feed is going up.
If we see, and there's a lot of nervousness, as you know, in the grain market about this growing season ahead and how heat could build, some are saying how dry conditions could stress the crop, how we could trim carryouts on corn and soybeans. If that happens, do you expect there to be that downward pressure on the feeders?
Yeah, I do think that the feeder cattle price in a general sense will adjust downward, and it really needs to give the cattle guy that's going to place animals an opportunity to turn a profit on fed closeouts. It's been a long time. Industry's lost a lot of equity on losses feeding cattle, so that is one ingredient that I think needs to cheapen up. Quite frankly, we probably need to end our beef cattle expansion as well. We don't want to get into an extreme oversupply situation.
That could happen, couldn't it? You know, that's one thing, just to shift gears a little bit. At World Pork Expo this week, they were talking about all of that pork coming along, and we're reminded of the efficiency that our operators are bringing to the table now. That was one subject that came to mind as we looked at all of the exhibits, all of the services, all of the products, all of the information at the disposal of pork producers now, and they seem to be continuing to ratchet up their efficiency, and that means more pork, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Record large production this year on the back of record large production last year. And we're exporting about 25% of that production. So there's a fine line there where the export market becoming so critically important. Certainly, U.S. producers are committed to feed the world.
Is there the possibility, and I was probing for the answer to this question at World Pork Expo this week, that 25% can continue to grow? Will it be up in the 30% range before too long?
Oh, I think so, and I think a lot of it will be moving to Asia. Interesting development. Recently, the Chinese government trying to discourage meat consumption in China with a growing middle class, that's going to be extremely difficult. I think they are quite concerned about feeding their population in the years ahead.
We heard some rumbling yet about the long-term effects of PED virus, what that did to our export capabilities, that West Coast longshoreman strike of a little more than a year ago, that did some damage to exports. Was it irreparable damage? They say some of those markets are hard to win back.
Well, no, I don't think it's irreparable. I think it will recover. And then look at some of our competitors, Brazil, for example, all sorts of problems. And who would you choose as a more reliable supplier of grains and meats, the U.S. versus Brazil? So I think in terms of competitors, U.S. will always stand out.
Let's talk about Brazil for a moment. How do you see what's happening down there affecting the global situation for meats?
Well, I think it's going to have a big impact, and I think it's just now starting to be felt in our hog market, the lean hog futures market, which has been moving sharply higher of recent. We're getting indications of pretty serious culling of sows, sow liquidation due to literally record high corn prices, no corn to feed. We're seeing that poultry producers are cutting back severely, and this is going to create a downturn in meat production. Brazil's our largest exporter of poultry meat and the fourth largest exporter of pork.
Those are important numbers to remember, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're having some real problems, and U.S. producers stand to benefit.
How much of the problem in Brazil was weather-related for that corn crop? How much of their problem is related to political challenges they have there?
Well, I think it's a combined situation with and how that impacts the currencies. When the real was very weak against the dollar last year, they chose to export a very large amount of their grains, including corn. Now you have the political situation even more uncertain. Now you have the currency strengthening up, and now you have a drought-impacted corn crop on their second corn crop. So it's kind of been a compounding situation, creating a real crisis in Brazil.
Back here at home, again, taking a look at the summer weather, how would you say meat traders are watching this summertime period ahead? And what kind of forecast have you guys been hearing for the summer weather-wise?
Weather-wise, we don't think there's a real serious threat at this point in the forecast, let's put it that way. Heat coming up, I think it will actually probably benefit the young developing crop because there's lots of moisture. So obviously the importance is, does a dry pattern become entrenched or do we go back to a normal, rainy type and then hot and dry and then rainy? We don't see anything really severe developing at this point in time.
While there are those pockets that you hear about when you're talking to producers, the corn and bean crops have gotten off to a pretty doggone good start, haven't they?
Boy, you're over 70% good to excellent in both corn and soybeans. And while it feels like it's been a late season, it really hasn't been a late season. We're right on target. I think we're off to a real good growing season. And interest in grain market developments seem to differ with that. But there's a lot of things going on impacting grain prices.
It is more than growing season weather ahead then, right?
Most definitely. We feel like just a shift in the demand curve for grains is contributed to the rally since the middle part of April, and we're not even really solely focused yet on weather patterns, like many times we are in the middle part of June.
What role has oil played? The fact that not only did that price stabilize, but it has bounced back up some, does that figure into the equation?
Yeah, Max, I use crude oil as sort of a benchmark on global economy strength and or weakness. And I think that's an indication that global economies are doing better than expected. Certainly a lot of the people we sell meat and grain to are highly dependent upon crude oil revenue. So you're seeing an improvement in a lot of global economies. And I think it's a very positive long-term growth situation.
Dennis, it's always great to sit down with you for a few minutes. Thanks for allowing some time this weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services in Chicago.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Before we take a closer look at some of the market numbers, about 20,000 people from the U.S. and other countries of the world gathered in Des Moines, Iowa this week for the annual World Pork Expo. Max Armstrong was there and had the opportunity to interview the new president of the National Pork Board. She's quite a lady, Jan Archer, a pork producer from North Carolina. She's a native of Michigan, a graduate of Michigan State University, and Max asked her how it feels to be president of the National Pork Board.
Well, it's exciting. You know, certainly there's a little trepidation, but I've been really fortunate to have been handed the reins to this organization by somebody that I really trust and has worked hard to mentor me. And we have a new CEO about whom I'm so excited. So this is going to be an exciting year.
Here at this Pork Expo, what's your feeling about the sentiment among pork producers? How do they feel about the situation right now in their industry?
Well, we have a lot of pork coming online. We have a lot of, we've got some farms that are expanding. We've got a lot of product coming on. And that's going to be a challenge. You know, sometimes we're the victims of our own success. And I've been raising pigs for 40 years, you know, and back in the day, if you raised 17 pigs per sow, somebody patted you on the back. Now, if you're not raising 30 pigs per sow, somebody's asking you what's going on. So we just are a much more efficient industry now. The antibiotic issue is one that producers are focused on, our consumers are focused on, I, as a grandmother, am focused on. So it's something that we take very seriously, and those are things that we're going to have to be addressing in these next few years.
As the industry adjusts to those new regulations being brought forward in the use of those animal health tools, one thing that really is going to be a challenge, is it not, is working with a local veterinarian, because in some places, vets are hard to come by.
Max, you are so right, and that's going to be a challenge. We do not have enough veterinary coverage in certain parts of our country. It's not going to be as big of an issue for large producers that may have veterinarians on staff. For small independent producers, especially in areas that are not traditionally hog-producing areas, that's going to be a challenge. So for all of those people who are saying, I want to be a veterinarian, think about large animal veterinary medicine. We have a lot of companion animal vets. We need more large animal vets.
One thing that seems to be a challenge for this industry from time to time is having enough pork processing capacity, having enough slaughter capacity in the U.S. But I was counting the other day, there are at least four or five new ones coming on. This is kind of an unusual era, is it not, with that new capacity coming forward?
It is. There was one other time in our industry in 98 when we had a lot of pork that came online very quickly. And those of us who have been in the industry for a long time remember those were frightening days.
It was brutal. It was eight cents.
It was brutal. And can our domestic market take up all of that supply? Highly doubtful. So we really have to focus on our international markets and our export ability. So we have to retain that ability and focus on developing new markets for our product.
We move a significant amount of pork into the export channels already. It's what, about 25% of the pork produced in this country?
It is. One out of every hog trucks that you see on the road is probably leaving this country. That's absolutely right.
Is that percentage expected to grow?
It has to grow. It doesn't have any choice. With all of the new capacity we have coming online, we never leave a void. So if there's capacity, we're going to produce hogs to fill it. And if we're going to do that, we're going to have to expand our export markets. And we have a great product that we need to be able to sell overseas, and people appreciate our product. We have lost some markets because of issues with PED that we didn't have product to sell, with the port issues that we had. We lost some customers. And as anyone who was in sales knows, much harder to get a customer back that you've lost than it is to get a new customer. So we're going to be working hard for that, and we have people on our team that are doing that.
Jan Archer, who will have some challenges ahead, but she sounds to me like a lady who can deal with challenges. And when we look at what happened in the hog futures market today, we found generally a higher market at the end of the day on Monday. The August live hog contract will start at $86.72 after gaining 25 cents today. Cattle market, not so good. Fund liquidation really put downward pressure on the cattle market today. Cash cattle in the U.S. plains moved a little bit higher at $128 from mostly $125 last week. But the cattle market, again, well, you heard the reasons from Dennis in his conversation with Max, continues to have its challenge. So Monday, August live cattle will start the week at $117.52. After dropping $1.32 today, and the August feeder cattle contract will start the week at $145.27 after dropping $2.02 today. Now, let's take a look at what happened in the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade in the soybean pit. Soybean futures rose for the ninth straight week. That is the longest bull run in 43 years. That's right. It's been 43 years since we have seen soybean futures on a nine-week run higher. And again, it's expectations that crop problems in Brazil and Argentina will bring more export business to the United States. And today, the Department of Agriculture confirmed increased demand in its monthly report that raised the government's estimate for soybean shipments, heightened its outlook for domestic supplies more than expected. Rich Feltus, head of market insights for broker R.J. O'Brien, said, "Nothing on today's report undermines the bull narrative." So July soybeans ended the week higher and reached the highest price for a most active contract since June of 2014. And again, the last time soybeans rose 9 weeks in a row was in 1973. For the day today, July corn slipped 0.8%, $4.23 a barrel, but the contract reached its highest point since July of 2015 on Wednesday of this week. July wheat, though, down 3% on Wednesday, however. That was quite a day at the grain market at the Board of Trade. On Wednesday, wheat set its highest price since November of 2015. And that report today from the Department of Agriculture trimmed its Brazil corn harvest for 2015-16 by 3.5 million tons and its Brazil soybean harvest outlook by 2 million tons, dropping that number to 97 million tons, reflecting the dryness in key growing areas of Brazil. And so Brazil, we've seen dry, but just a little bit south. Argentina, of course, saw its crop really hit by too much moisture. And looking at some of the comments following that report today from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Don Roos, president of U.S. Commodities, said, "This is a positive report on the soybeans and corn and a negative report on wheat from a U.S. and world production standpoint. What we have really learned about this report is we had the largest rally on beans week after week going back to 1973, and we have a lot of this bull news already dialed into the market." The other thing that got to me earlier this week when we saw that soybean rally on Thursday, they blamed it on heat. We're only in the second week of June. Now, I can see heat problems in July and August, but heat problems this early having a negative impact on crops? A little early, I think. But who knows what it takes to move the market. I've seen it now for 55 years. That is our time this week. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong and I'm Orion Samuelson. We look forward to seeing you next week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.